Welcome to Modcast, a Civilization podcast focused on game modding. Rob R8XFT.
T Pangolin.
Jan Boruta.
Alpha Shard.
Shall we start the actual show then?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so we're fairly clear on what we're doing, yeah?
I suppose so, yes.
The main topics. Welcome to Modcast. Oh, what's the number, though, of Modcast? Which number is it?
Take this in, Dan.
Is it at 61 now? Or 62?
You can just do both and then he can pick one.
Podcast number, insert number here.
So welcome to Modcast 62 with me, Rob R8XFT. Joining me today are...
Jan Boruta.
Keep Angolan.
Oh, for sure.
And William Howard.
Right, well, welcome to the show, William.
I've just received a very interesting reply from PayPal. I don't know if you know, but PayPal has a donate button.
Yes.
And their website is very, very confused as to whether you have to be a charity or a not-for-profit organisation. And I have just literally received a reply from the support people at PayPal that actually says, you can use the donation button on any website. You do not need to be a not-for-profit or charity business. So if you have your own website and you put your mods on it, you can technically put a donate button on it.
Mm. Well, this is common practice on Nexus mods, for example, the Elder Scrolls games and Fallout games. There are pop-ups when you download the game, and there's always this little PayPal donate button. So.
Yeah, but if you go and read the PayPal website, it's actually not clear as to whether you're allowed to do that. If you're not a charity or a not-for-profit organisation. So before I stuck it on my website, I was thinking of sticking it on my website, I have actually got official response from PayPal, so now we know.
Well, I'm a bit confused about those things as well, because I'm going to do some artwork for a Kickstarter project.
Yeah.
So money is not guaranteed, but I will have to read up on how taxation on it is done. Because if it is done as charity, under Polish tax laws, I have to give away half of it, or something like that.
Oh, the other one is you just put the button on that says, buy me a beer.
Yeah, that would be better.
It's like somebody giving you a couple of euros or a couple of quid in the pub and saying, here, have a beer. You know, HMRC, get none of that.
Yeah.
You have to make the sacrifices for your art sometimes.
Yeah.
William, we're pleased to have you on board today. I mean, lots of people obviously know you from all the pick and mix mods that you put out there on Civ Fanatics. So how do you actually get started?
How did I get started? That's a good question. I downloaded a mod called Legions because I wanted some enhancements to the Swordsman. And when it came with a whole load of other promotions and things, which I wasn't interested in at the time, and thought, hang on, I've downloaded one thing, I've got nine. I only wanted one. And then I started looking at how to extract the one thing I wanted out of the eight I didn't. And once I discovered that you could get the one thing out, it then, looking at how Firaxis put mods together, it was fairly obvious that you could make a mod of nine parts in nine parts, and kind of that's how Pick and Mix was born.
That's like an admirable strategy, because that's like one of the main complaints behind mods such as Advanced User Interface or the Community Patch. There are some really cool things that you agree with, but a lot of things that just don't. And the great thing about Pick and Mix is that you can literally pick and mix.
Well, it's also an advantage I find from development, because once I've developed one little mod within Pick and Mix, I can then play with it. And if I'm developing the next one and it breaks, you just don't enable it and you don't play with it. But you also know that that bit that's broken hasn't broken anything else. And I suspect Rob can feel some of this pain with Anno Domini. In that you got a big thing, one thing breaks, it can break something else as well. Whereas with the pick and mix mods, I do have this advantage in that when one thing's finished, it's finished and can be put out there. And then I work on the next thing. Did make writing the DLL quite exciting, but that's what we'll probably come on to.
So does it usually take longer to conceptualize a mod or to actually create it?
Most of my mods have come around because I've been playing play something and it will annoy me. Yeah, and the fact that great generals appear in your capital and not the other side of the planet where the combat is occurring. I'll get the idea of what I want to change from actually annoyances in the game that I was playing. And now, having written so many, I can kind of conceptualize what needs to be changed and where it goes. But you'll probably be glad to hear that anything UI-related still takes me absolutely hours to do. Even simple layouts, you just end up going, oh, God. What I now do on UI layouts is I actually just throw everything at the screen, bring it up in the game, start up Fire Tuner, and then start moving things around and eventually work out where it goes. I'll actually end up occasionally taking screen grabs, saving them in a graphics program, and then working out that this button needs to go 4 pixels higher to align with what I want.
Oh, right.
So you mentioned about the DLL there. Anybody that says that can mod the DLL must be a god, I think. You know, it just seems so far removed from my skill set. Just the pure sound of I'm modding the DLL makes me think I am not competent.
I think anybody who mods the DLL is not so much a god as just purely insane.
Not mutually exclusive?
Definitely including me. When you look at the Lua source code within Civ 5, quite clearly bits of it have come from Civ 4 and previous versions. When you get into the DLL, it is very, very clearly based on Civ 4 and previous iterations of it, down to the point that there are comments in the code that says there used to be a PHP hook here. There's still an awful lot of stuff in the DLL which is not used or has been disabled. So you'll start looking for something, oh, I want to do this, and you'll find where you think it is, but that code isn't actually used. So we describe the Lua interface and the coding as spaghetti coding. The DLL truly is a spaghetti nightmare in there, and trying to work out how things are done. And while it is written in C++, and anybody with a passing knowledge of C++ could look at it and read the code, it's also quite clearly come from C, the previous programming language, and it is not object-orientated. So as a professional programmer myself, based in Java and object-orientated, I come along, look at it, and make a certain number of assumptions about how things will work, and they're quite clearly wrong. So you kind of have to throw every pre-assumption you had about the code away and actually say, what is it doing? I've got to look at every single line and work out what it does. The classic example of that is how culture was implemented. So if we look at standard yields, you've got what, gold, food, science, and production. And then you start looking in the Lua interface and you've got all of these, John's culture and John's this, and you start looking in the code, in the DLL. And the code for the 4 standard yields is all in one place. And culture is somewhere completely different. And it's like, why was it done like this? Why did the person who wrote the original yield code not add culture in the same way? And then when Gods and Kings came along, they changed that so that culture was sort of behaving the same way in the game and the game databases and the XML files. But the underlying code hasn't changed. So there's all these things that kind of takes the old calls and tries to manipulate it in the new way.
And then when the whole tourism yield.
Well, when they added faith, if you look at the faith in the code, which was the next yield added, half as kind of the old culture approach and half as kind of how science is implemented, that's not consistent to anything. So you've actually got 3 methods, and then tourism is more or less implemented as how culture used to be implemented. People probably noticed on Civ Fanatics that I went quiet for a couple of months, and that was purely the fallout and recovering from writing unified yields. That was more or less the straw that broke this particular camel's back. Went and played Sims 2 again. You could kind of go, well, yeah, let's see what's in there and see what I could change. But if you don't have a clear idea of what you want to change and how it works in the game, you really will not find a starting point. What you need to do is start at the UI, and you can then track that into the DLL, and you will eventually find the code. You've kind of got to track everything back from something that's in the XML files or the Lua files into the DLL.
So it's essentially not for the faint-hearted.
You kind of have to have a plan. You've got to know where you're starting from and keep taking those little steps and work your way in. But you can make very major changes in there. The AI work that people have done and the incorporation of the vassalage system. None of those were minor changes. So there are a number of people doing a number of different things.
But if you have one modified DLL, it will, of course, run with another.
And that's where the pick and mix became an interesting concept, because as soon as I start changing the DLL for one mod, I then can't change it for another one. So every single one of the changes that I have made in the DLL, you can actually switch on and off and by default, they're all off. I have a DLL which effectively has something like 80-odd switches on it, and whichever then micromod you install, yeah, it adds an entry into a database table, and the DLL picks up those database table entries and enables the features back in, which means that I can keep my pick-and-mix approach.
Right.
You can pick 10 of my mods which go on the DLL, and the other 70 don't switch on.
Very interesting way of doing it. That's just very innovative.
Otherwise, you end up with you have to have all of these changes or you have none of them. And the community patch project has adopted the same approach. Things are switched on and switched off, obviously built off my DLL.
Since the same source code is essentially used, if you use the community patch, can you still use DLL-required mods from Pick and Mix?
Yes, you can.
How many different mods have you done then? Tell us.
I added them up just before I came on. 304.
304.
Yeah.
304 mods, 194 of which you play. Which ones would you say are the most essential if you had to pick a couple?
If I had to pick one, it's UI Trade Opportunities, the first major UI mod that I worked. And it's the one that if I start playing an unmodded game, that I will get to trading with three or four civilizations and I will rage quit and start a modded game with only that one installed. And the other one that I find very hard now playing without is something called UI Diary, which you can hover over the turn and the date counters. And it just centralizes all of the things that are going to happen, like your science will complete in turns and your next policy choices in 9 turns and your declaration of friendship with someone finishes in 15 turns. And it just means I can hover over something and think, yeah, nothing's finishing in 12 turns. I can go to bed now.
That is way too convenient for me to use.
Well, most of the information in things like UI Diary is available. You can hover over the science thing. It will tell you how many turns you are. You then have to hover over the culture cost, and it will tell you how many turns to your next policy. And you can go and look at your trade deals and find out when you started your declaration of friendship or read to go to
so
war
this
with
just
someone.
Adds more of that.
Yeah. If you wanted to play the game how Firaxis had written the game, then you would still be playing version 1.23 of, you know, the original vanilla game. You wouldn't have installed Gods and Kings or any DLC or anything, and you certainly wouldn't be playing with any mods. So you're changing the game. You're making it your game. If you want that information, then it's yours to want to have.
Of course.
A bit like all these people that go, oh, well, I want to gain all the achievements. And it's like, well, yeah, other than bragging rights, they don't give you anything. They don't unlock anything. They don't make anything more. And in fact, if you want to unlock all of them, I wrote a DLL which will unlock all of them for you. So if you've gone, oh, well, I supposedly got this achievement, but it appears to be bugged. Yeah, just go and auto-enable it. You're only cheating yourself at the end, right? Oh, I still want to get achievements, but I want to use all these mods. Can I install them as a DLC? Well, yes, you can, but that wasn't the point, surely. Your game, play it how you want.
Speaking of 304 mods, how do you go about keeping them up to date?
Because they're modular, there was one to begin with, and it was written, and it was tested, and it was finished, and it was put to one side. And unless Gods and Kings or BNW broke it, it really hasn't been changed.
Yeah, it's not like the Civs mod where every time somebody comes up with something new, you've got to make it compatible with that.
Probably not at all.
Thank goodness.
And this is one of the reasons that I've got my own website rather than trying to use CFC's upload area. I have a Java program that scans my Firaxis ModBuddy subdirectory and finds any changes to mods that have been made and automatically uploads them to my website. So I will fix a bug in a mod, I will change its version number, and I'll play it. And then about every week or so, or whenever I remember that I've got to upload them, I just run a program and it goes, oh yes, you've changed that one, and that one. I'll upload them. So that's how I keep
fantastic.
Them up to date.
I need that. You see, a lot of the times we forget to change the number, and I'm like, oh no.
Well, my little program, because it's got a copy of the website, it says, you've got a version 12 of that mod, but the version that you uploaded to your website is also version 12, and the dates differ. My program tells me I've forgotten to change the version number. The advantage of being able to automate uploading to your own website, as opposed to having to use Steam, where you don't get versions at all, so forget it.
A question that I had given to me, actually via PM on Reddit a month or so ago, I didn't think I actually responded, I feel like a terrible person at this point, that if you use your DLL pack, the standard DLL components, does that change absolutely anything?
If you just download DLL various mod components version, whatever we're on, 72, it changes nothing major. There are a few very, very small bugs in there that it fixes, but most of them coding errors, and you wouldn't run across them in a normal game. I think the one it does fix, which you don't have to switch on, is working the center tile of a city. Everything else by default is off, and you then have to download one of the micro mods, which will switch on the particular features that you want.
You have already so many pick and mix mods, but are there some things that still annoy you that you want to mod out?
Yes, there are some which I'm doing at the moment. The big one that I'd really like to work out, why I wanted DLL source for Beyond Earth, I'd really like to be able to make units appear as another civilization, so that when Germany moves up to a barbarian camp and gets barbarian units, they actually appear as barbarians, and only Germany knows they're barbarians. And you could then use them.
The privateers sort of in civil.
Yeah, and in Beyond Earth, you can dig up ruins and you befriend aliens. But the aliens appear as your units, and the other aliens know that they're your units, but they should just all be aliens. So you should be able to wander a barbarian into barbarian lands, and the other barbarians won't know that they're you and attack you. Or you could wander into somebody else's land and steal a worker, and it would appear as if a barbarian had stolen the worker.
Yeah.
I'd really like to be able to get that to work.
Yeah, that sounds like a fun feature right there, and I know that I've been wanting something like that as well, kind of like mercenaries or something, but yeah, privateers on land, that'd be great.
I'm digging in the DLL to see if that is possible at the moment, so it may or may not happen. It depends on real life and work, unfortunately.
Since when real life prevented me from working on mods?
The other alternative is to have something in the espionage system where you can get like some ninja spy sort of thing that can go around and assassinate civilians.
We need that. Ninjas, yes, we need that, ninjas.
But, you know, it appears as not from your civilization.
What sort of percentage of your civ time would you say was spent modding as opposed to playing?
Oh, God. It's probably about 60-40, but can I not be drawn on which way round?
Okay.
It's a very political answer.
Very. Jet, recently Colonial Legacies has brought out Malaysia as one of their newest civs.
Yes.
Could you tell us a little more about that?
Sure. Malaysia is a civilization that has been in the works for a while, and what Colonial Legacies loves to do is forward settle certain civilizations and say, yeah, let's do this. Malaysia is a civilization that really only came to fruition because of JFD. We asked him, you know, is there anything that you would like to collaborate on, and really wanted to help with Malaysia, and that's very appreciated. Unique Landschnecks, or however you pronounce them, that you don't purchase them by gold, purchase them by culture. Your workers can upgrade your unique unit if there's an enemy unit within our two tiles of them, and they also get lots of bonuses for seafaring, and also at the same time, they have a unique improvement that can only be built on coastal tiles. So there's a lot of cool, unique mechanics, and I think it's very Colonialist Legacies in terms of the amount of gimmicky features. Because I think when we create a civilization, we try to make it DLC-like, Firaxis-like, so we go kind of ball to the wall crazy in terms of what we add. We try to make sure that it's just like, oh wow, there's a lot of work that went into it. So it's a really sort of comprehensive addition to the game, makes people want to download it and experience something completely new, as opposed to a really cool, flavorful civilization that adds a couple of tweaks in a Colosseum building or something of the sort. It's been very, very well received so far. It's had some bugs. For example, there was quite an annoying bug wherein originally in the first version of the mod, at any point of time, a worker could upgrade to the unique trident-bearing unique unit. And what would happen was the Malaysian civilization, as the AI, as soon as they would get a worker, they would automatically upgrade it to the Pestilat. So you can basically play against them, and as soon as you stumble across Malaysian territory, their entire borders were filled with their unique unit because they kept on trying to produce workers to improve their territory, but they couldn't. So they just upgraded them, hopefully fixed at this point.
Just features?
Yeah, just features.
Have you had Malaysia near the Battle Royales yet?
No, not yet. We had the first one and that crashed, and the second one's still ongoing at this point of time. It's one of those things where you have to kind of sit it out to completion or until the game crashes, and then you have to go ahead and make another Battle Royale. With this Battle Royale, I always include this picture at the end of the religion spread. It also functions as like what new cities have been founded on the map at the same time. Some people compile like animated GIFs at some point. You get to see the progression throughout the game of new cities being founded and religion spreading.
I'm missing that map at the moment because I'm playing a lot of Beyond Earth Rising Tide. One of the more annoying things in Rising Tide is the things you can go and dig up, so alien skeletons and crash satellites. Finding them again in the ocean is a nightmare, and I really miss being able to pop that little map up with lots of dots as to where things are, so you could see your explorer and what was immediately around you to go and find. But they've taken out the entire strategic view layer. I tend to play Civ entirely in the strategic layer because I just prefer the layout to it.
Start off with earlier iterations of Civ in which it's more reminiscent of that.
Well, I played Civ 1, and then I had a big break until Civ 5, so...
How is Rising Tide treating you? Because I haven't played it at all. Is it something that you would actually recommend? Does it flesh out the game in the way that Brave New World and Gods and Kings does?
I think the Rising Tide variation on Beyond Earth makes it more interesting. The one thing I can't get to grip with is what is the point of having a city in the middle of an ocean? You need three ships to go and conquer it and fall pretty quickly. I must be missing the whole point of that. But if you play it without floating cities and play it on the land, it has much more things to go and do and explore and go and find. There's much more interaction with the map. And I really like the espionage system with it. What I really wish is that Firaxis would release the source code for it so that we could see whether it's going to be the basis of Civ 6 or whether we could hoik the espionage system out of it and stick it in Civ 5, but they haven't done it. I did a written interview with David Hinkle of 2K Games. I actually asked him if they were going to release the source code, and he went very, very quiet.
I think there was that big worry that Firaxis would really condemn people who got Beyond Earth assets and put them into Civ 5. A lot of people were trying to get some of the really cool 3D assets and put them back to Civ 5, but a lot of people were kind of also at the same time very wary and scared to see what Firaxis would have to say about doing something like that.
Well, given that getting 3D assets into Civ 5 is a pain in the neck anyway, trying to get them out of Beyond Earth and into Civ 5, wish you luck. But they've used the same format, then the tools are there, you can bring them out. You're just bringing out XML files and Blender files and other bits that I really don't understand. But yeah, I can see why they might not have wanted people to pull the entire espionage system out of Beyond Earth and replace it into Civ 5. But it's a shame.
For contrast, the Creative Assembly approach to the recent games, so Rome 2 Total War and Attila Total War, most of the things from both of the games are interchangeable, and they don't mind putting Attila stuff in Rome 2 and Rome 2 stuff in Attila. So,
but the Civilization sort of philosophy of game design, in which, wasn't it itself that 33 rule, where 33% has to be new if you're going to create a new game, and you know, have to retain aspects from the old as well? If you were going to attribute that to Rising Tide, maybe you could kind of see why they wouldn't want to rip out that source code, because that is essentially a selling point.
Yeah.
It is something completely new.
Or it could just be coming in Civ 6. They could be using Rising Tide as a basics, but who knows? That's speculation.
So, are you going to stop doing mods now and just go straight up to Civ 6 and start porting? Or
who knows?
What's going to happen? I don't know. Everyone's very wary after Beyond Earth, especially that Civ 6 is just going to be as bad as vanilla Civ 5 was.
I thought I'd stop modding Civ 5 and start doing Civ Beyond Earth, but I think I've done about 30 mods for that, that you keep hitting points where you go, this would be a really cool idea. I need the DLL source. Oh, I could do this one, really cool. I need the DLL source. So I might have got myself in a position where I need the DLL source to write mods, so probably won't be writing any for Civ 6 until that comes out.
Interesting to see if it follows the same path of a lot of CFC modders did with Beyond Earth, that when Beyond Earth first came out, a lot of the CFC modders bought Beyond Earth, they modded it for about a month or two, and then everyone's back to Civ 5.
You can put me in that group.
Now, that's probably why. I kind of missed out modding Civ 4, because I hadn't finished with Civ 3. And then when Civ 5 came out, I was ready to do a new Civ, and I might as well do the one that's there. Mm. I think with Beyond Earth, it came out at a point that people were at where they hadn't finished what they were doing with Civ 5. So JFD was still coming out with Citizen Development. They just had Mercenaries come out since that was published.
Mm.
So, and it was from that base that the modders for the next game would come.
I guess it's a very easy depth to go from Civ 5 modding to Beyond Earth modding, but you're going to have to wonder what Civ 6 is going to be, if they're going to use anything like the same engine, if it's going to be easy to adapt and port things over from the Civ your own mod.
Makes you wonder, doesn't it? For example, I think we spoke before about the Civilization leader screens, because Civ 5 is the first time when we've got art that covers the complete screen.
Mm.
So whatever format the next leader is going to be, if you can do a static version of it, you've already got several screens where you can either have the full screen, if that's what it's going to be, or part screen, and reduce it.
We got the Beyond Earth, had the 3D leader screen, but also didn't cover the complete screen because you can still see the game in the background. That also has the evolving leaders over time, so it makes you wonder what they're going to do with Civ 6, really.
So much work. So much work.
If, for example, with the mods that I do, if it's only on one era you're concentrating on, then you're almost okay.
All I hope is that, well, it's not my area, but I hope that editing of 3D leader screens will be easier in Civ 6.
Everything should be easier in Civ 6. Yeah. Civ 6 is going to be the most moddable Civ ever. Famous last words.
Yeah.
I think the thing is, Civ 5, the famous last words were, it was the most moddable Civ ever. Mm. And at first people said, yeah, right, like it is, because there was no editor or whatever. But if you know what you're doing, then it is a very moddable Civ. If you don't know what you're doing, then it isn't. So, you know, once we've got people like William on board who can mod the DLL, which just seems crazy to me, and all the stuff that JFD and others have done, there's so much that you can potentially do.
Yeah.
But the caveat is, if you've got the right skills.
So it makes you wonder if they're going to increase that threshold, or if they're going to keep it at the same level, or are they going to make things more accessible by having a Civilization-style editor. Like, did anyone play Warcraft 3, and they had that Warcraft 3 editor where you could basically pretty much do absolutely anything that you wanted. And a lot of games do have those sort of style editors, so it makes you wonder if they're going to invest money in doing that, because I think the modding community is a big part of the Civilization community in general, and if that's really worth investing a lot of time in from their perspective, because it's really a big contributing factor in regards to keeping the game alive. I mean, it's a game that's still consistently within, like, the top 10 most played games since release. You wouldn't have to wonder how much mods contribute to that playtime.
I think a lot, but I think that what they did in Civ 5, for example, when we were just talking about leader screens, they had a leader screen that was almost impossible to replicate because it was animated, it had vocals from the local community that the leader head was from, and, you know, I know that you've done the one for Australia, but on an ongoing basis, it's very difficult to replicate that. So what I'm hoping that they do is they carry on with their professional artwork or the professional leaderhead, for example, in this case, where it's animated and maybe speak, but give the facility straight away for us to be able to do something that will all go in there instead of that, that would be acceptable as well.
Yeah.
But Firaxis are caught between a rock and a hard place to some extent. You've got the people that just want to play the game and they want 3D maps, they want animated units, they want animated leaderheads, they want all the things that their highly expensive graphics cards can give them. But at the other end of the spectrum, you've got the modders who say, well, I don't have the skills to do any of that. I'm not an artist, I'm not a DLL coder, I'm not a database programmer. You can feel their pain to some extent.
Yeah.
One of the things that worries me about Beyond Earth is that they've brought in a third-party Lua library called Havoc, which is actually a professional paid-for third-party closed-source library, and it's used quite extensively within the API. All of the decisions, the quest decisions that come up, the quests, the multi-part quests, are all based off Havoc. They go down that route for Civ 6. They're going to make coding the UI much, much harder. Whereas I think we
Well, it really depends if they advertise it as the most moddable Civ ever, or if they're just going to...
Well, either they don't and people want
to mod it.
They
can advertise what they want.
Then the learning curve has gone up again. So.
Well, they've got to do something that they perceive is either different or better than Civ 5, because there's no point in bringing out another Civ 5, because people say, well, we're kind of playing what we've got.
Yeah, that's the big thing with Beyond Earth. It's just another Civ 5 to a lot of people until Rising Tide came out anyway.
Yeah.
So it makes you wonder how different Civ 6 is going to be to differentiate itself. I mean, the Civ 4 to Civ 5 is such a big step up. Civ 6 is just incomprehensible.
Well,
Civ 5's an Art Deco style. Everything about it is pretty arty and people don't like change. But Civ 5, it was appreciated to a certain extent.
It will be a third new and a third gone.
Half a unit per tile.
I think one of the changes in perception now is that as each Civ has come out, people have been looking forward to there being a new Civ iteration because of whatever reason. Now we've got Civ 5, and now there's been so many things and so many mods out there that have changed so many things. People are saying now, do I really want to start again with something that won't have necessarily all the systems because we've got to wait for expansion packs, you know? So, I don't know.
On a pessimist note, I think we'll end up having a simpler game that is harder to edit.
Yeah.
I'm because, not sure it's going to be a simpler game. I think it's going to be a more visually engaging game using more features of the machine that's sat on your desktop at the moment. And that, by implication, is going to mean that you're going to need more skills and it will be harder to mod.
Maybe. So. Who knows?
If you can't hear the silence is just us crying inside. Oh, man. If it's going to come out in the fourth quarter, you have to wonder how long they've been really doing it for.
Well, I remember during the release of Spaceships, Sid Meier's had said, whatever game you want us to be working on or wondering if we're working on, don't worry, we're probably working on it. So I think that was him implying that they were working on Civ 6, but it was far too early to be giving.
Yeah, they're working on the Ace Patrol expansion.
Well, I just hope they've got Ed Beach on it, because if you remember last time when he took over at Gods and Kings, there were certain things that he couldn't do because of how Civ 5 vanilla was. You know, we were saying at the time that if he got involved, then hopefully could start things off right at the beginning on the brilliance that he led with the Gods and Kings and also Brave New World. He'll be able to start from scratch, which would imply it would be a new engine, one would think.
Yeah, they did a dramatic change in Civ 5 from Civ 4, so you could probably conceive another dramatic change.
There was a dramatic change, but, you know, they went from square grid to a hex grid. But if you look internally in the DLL, everything is still internally in a square grid. There is code that maps from a square grid to a hex grid and from a hex grid back to a square grid. So will they change the engine? Well, there's a game engine we don't have access to. There's a game logic, which we do have access to, and that logic still contains a lot of Civ 4 code. What is the game engine? The game engine is probably the bits that render the graphics. Will they bring a new one in, or will they update it? Yeah, there's a lot of lot of time and effort and development in there. Will there be new logic for the game core? Yeah, almost certainly, because you've got a new game. But will it be based off Civ 5, which was based off Civ 4? My bets are it will be.
I agree. The biggest personal thing for me is, like, just how is it going to look? Because I really do like Civ 5, how it's the current inception of it with the Art Deco style.
Same here.
If the future is scary, because if you look at their current thing with Beyond Earth, I hate the UI. It's bland, it's grey, it's just... It makes the game feel somewhat stale. I like Civ 5 because it feels so flavorful and rich and has this sort of timeless style. It makes you wonder what they're going to do next, and I can't even think of any alternatives because I'm not creatively minded, I guess.
But the UI for Beyond Earth is kind of futuristic and very... Yeah, minimal. In fact, if you look at how websites are going, because you've got tablets and smartphones and they've all got to be blocked down, it's actually where most website is going, the interface approach for Beyond Earth. It's all very blocky.
Yeah, I understand the whole flat versus realism, but even the colour scheme, it was just too bland. It was just like a brown-grey.
Oh, God, don't ever play on fungal terrain. It's purple.
It's a great mod that revitalises the textures and makes them more colourful and less bland.
But if you look at Civ 5, Civ 5 Vanilla was one set of UIs, and then Gods and King came along and it was different again, and then Beyond Earth has come along, it's a different set of graphics again. And if you go back and play Civ 5 Vanilla, you do kind of get a culture shock.
Yes, because of the blue as opposed to the teal.
The same looks, but recolor, they make a difference.
Yeah.
You might not have noticed it, but your brain did.
Mm. Thanks for putting that image in my head. The Play-Doh.
Will it have expansion packs? Well, they'd shoot themselves in the marketing foot if they didn't leave some things out which they could add later, or some good ideas out which they could add later. Will it be balanced on day one? Doubt it. But then, if it was, we'd have nothing to mod.
I bet they are looking at our mods just to see what we do, in case they've got some very good ideas there, and maybe that could be something for expansions down the way. We recently had the Modcast survey for 2015. We were asking people for feedback, things that we should be using in 2016 as well. So thank you for those people that responded.
There were 13.
Well, there were 13, which is better than 10 last time. If you do listen to Modcasts and didn't respond, we'll be doing the same thing at the end of 2016. Please make your voice heard. one of the things that was asked was like a mailbag and a listener feedback. Mm-hmm. It'd be great if we got a little bit more feedback maybe in the thread, so if there's any direction you felt we'd missed or something we could have done differently, please say so and we can address it, hopefully. So within the questions that we asked, it seems like more or less the format of what we do the show is what people were wanting, particularly with the modding spotlight and looking at news and developments and having a guest on who we could ask about how they started, etc. That seemed to be quite popular, and we tend to look at a couple of the recent releases as well. It was nice to see that our guests were quite popular. We hope to get one or two more different guests in this year, such as William, for example.
Yeah.
We've had some great guests, and William's obviously one of those.
That's all right, Rob. You can stop buttering me up now.
As somebody who's presumably, or I hope, listened to some of the modcasts, what are your thoughts?
I've listened to about the last three or four. I do find them very interesting. They cover a variety of topics. I quite like the bits of just loose chat as well that get stuck in there.
Yeah, I think that's my favourite thing about the show is just the looseness of it.
Yeah. Discovering that people are actually human at the end of these coding cycles.
Yeah, but it's kind of hard to accommodate other topics than modding news or legacies of modders, because you can't really talk about graphics. You can show it on the modcast. So listener feedback is small, relatively.
Yeah.
So it's mostly going to be mod spotlights, mod news, and interviews, basically. And I think it works. It shows what William said, that it shows the human face of modders. And I think
what we've tried to do as well is ask and involve the guests of the day in recent developments or, for example, the paid mods scenario. We had a couple of good discussions around there and particularly involve the guests within it. And what we've done well, I think, is to make it a bit more about the guests when they've come on.
Did everyone vote for themselves with a favourite post?
Whilst there was a voter who was the favourite modcast regular co-host, which Jan got the most votes for, there were people that were said, to be honest with you, would like to vote for everybody. It's difficult to choose between different hosts. There's been a query for a modding wish list segment, which I think we've tried to incorporate in the last couple of times.
Mm-hmm. What could pretty much talk about our modding wishes every podcast. We always speculate of what could be modded and what wouldn't, what ideas we had and had to be scrapped. So do we move that onto another segment?
No.
Or just go with it and include it in the sort of chatter?
You're right, and certainly in the last handful of modcasts that we've done, we've asked people, because we've got half a mind that maybe Civ 6 might be coming on the horizon, for what they would want to have modding-wise in the next iteration and what's missing from this one.
Yeah.
So perhaps that person could clarify it in the thread.
Yes, definitely. But I think we will start talking about the modding wishlist as we get the announcements for Civ 6. And I think we'll get an announcement after XCOM 2 is released. So they have a have a clean slate. I suspect it will be like that because Firaxis is big on XCOM 2 right now.
Right.
After that is out and the hype subsides, they will be free to hype up Civ 6.
There's been very little about doing a section on Beyond Earth, but it probably would be good to get a guest on at some point during 2016 who got some experience in that area. One of the questions on the survey was how much you want us to talk about Civ 5 and how much you want us to talk about Beyond Earth. I would imagine that if Civ 6 comes out as we expect, then the conversation here will start to become more Civ 6 orientated.
Provided we get stuck with Civ 6 and its mods.
Well, that's it. I mean, it depends on us, doesn't it? But you'd hope that, you know, like now, between us, we're using art skills, we're using people with Lua skills and people with XML. Possibly it'll follow the same sort of format where people that can do those things can do the same things for the next iteration, which wasn't necessarily the case in previous.
I mean, there's a lot of Civ 5 modders that had their start in Civ 4. It's not unreasonable.
Yeah, and I think as people that sort of joined at some point in Civ 5, it'd be nice to be there from the start in Civ 6, wouldn't it? Pardon?
I think there's a fat chance for that, and we can also depend on an influx of new people interested in modding Civ 6.
I hope so. It's always good to get different ideas and different people doing it, and there'll be people that haven't finished with Civ 5 who want to continue with it. I mean, on the whole, thank you very much for the feedback. by all means, again, please post in the threads any thoughts that you have on the modcast.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Calling today, in North America the number is 301-637-7659. In Europe, 44121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Modcast, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net. So anything else that we want to discuss today?
Just the final word is we're all cautiously optimistic about Civ 6.
Yeah.
Cautiously, that's the big word there.
But, cautiously optimistic about the fact that there might be Civ 6 coming out and what it might look like. So fingers crossed that
it
does.
And also how easy it is to mod. And
that's the key, isn't it?
And also
it?
The fact that they're going to follow the same thing with the unique units. Are we going to have 1, 2, 3? Oh, God. How much is going to change? You don't know.
But the great thing is, Jack, if Civ 6 comes out this year and you release Civ for it, then you won't have to make it compatible with JFD Citizen Development, with this, that, and the other. You can start back again.
Oh, man.
There might be some sort of relief there. You might be released from having to make it compatible with all these different mods.
I was just going to say, Jet forward settling Civs in Civ 6 already.
Oh, that's... We say that, but yeah, when before Civilization Beyond Earth came out, everyone was starting to mod for it. Everyone was starting to prepare mods for it, basically on the same engine. Everyone started to create the lore behind their civs, and yeah, I remember it was like a race to see in the new civilizations category who could create the first good, decent sort of civilization. Friendly rivalry, but it's also very sort of competitive, soft competition. So the exact same, I predict, is going to happen with Civ 6. Everyone from New Civilizations is going to see who can create the first civilization for it, or just port everything over, essentially.
That's the thing. How incompatible is everything going to be with everything else?
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to give us like piecemeal reveal about it, but people are definitely going to be starting to plan for it as much as they can before it gets released, just so that they can get that leg up on everybody else. I mean, that's personally what I'm going to be doing. Like, I like to say that that's what everyone is, but that is what everyone's going to be doing. That's what happened before.
I think that it will finally herald, the announcement of Civ 6 will finally herald the end of Anno Domini for Civ 5 and a final release.
Mm.
Yeah, it will bring in a wave of final releases of mods.
And of course, what will happen is a thread long dead will in 2023 be resurrected with, this is a good mod. but I think what he should do is something like this, this, and this. Well, I did it about 10 years ago, man.
Or a couple of posts saying download link is broken.
Yeah, I've had that recently with Civ 3. You know, you should really do this with such and such. Something along those lines. I said, well, did it like 12 years ago, man, and moved on. You know? Anyway, celebre.
Why can't we live stream podcast for once? Maybe next time.
Because the conversation would be all over the place. You know that.
Oh, why not?
There's a miracle with that editor.
Well, you can hear that Polycast is also heavily edited, so probably they just ramble about everything as well. Yeah, and they live stream every other Saturday, so... It's a regular show.
We could have all 13 of our viewers.
Yeah.
Right, shall we wrap things up then?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. This has been Modcast 62. Thank you for listening. I'm Rob, RATEXFT. Joining me today were...
Jan Boruta.
Steve Angolan.
Dal Pashari.
And William Howard. Thanks for having me, guys.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for coming.
Coming along.
Don't be a stranger.
Good night, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you may be.
Do you want us to call you William, by the way?
Yes,
on
please.
Call? Right, that's fine. Sometimes people want to be called by their forum name, and others want to be called by their...
As long as you don't call me Who Ward, I'll be okay.
Yeah,
I will hang up.
So many people that do.
And this will be some of the British accent overload today.
Yes, I was thinking it would be a bit of an English affair. Talk about modding and then go home and have a nice cup of tea.
Well, I got a cup of token tea, so... I can pose for one. All I'm waiting is Jet or Tipangolin to join, I think. and then we'll be able to start.
Yeah, he's just typing at the minute with me. I'm just telling him what we were discussing.
Yeah, I see that.
Well, we're picking up from 2 weeks ago, aren't we, Rob?
We are, yeah. I mean, we didn't tape that one, of course. So.
It was probably just as well. It was mainly about cats and British accents, wasn't it?
Yeah.
recurring topics. Just so it's cleaner and we have a definitive starting point, but for now we can still talk about Civ, and maybe some of this will be used as snippets in later installments or something like that, so nothing of value will be lost.
Yes, well, I mean, the thing is, if, you know, William, if you want to join in the conversation with this as well, you know, maybe we could just talk to you just briefly about what we're going to discuss and some of what you've said.
I just have the artistic talents of a six-year-old, so when you come to discussing leader heads, I just kind of go...
Oh, sorry.
Yeah!
So, welcome to Mudcast 62, with me, Rob, R8XFT. Joining me today are...
Oh, cool. We did it both at the same time. Please leave a message after the beep.
So, welcome to Modcast 62.
Even the words they've read, they read what they want to read on the actual words. So,
yes, absolutely. Post one, please read the instructions. It tells you you need everything Civ to run this game and know what the mod should be included. Post two, this mod is broken. I can't get it to run. Three, have you read the instructions? Oh no, didn't realise I didn't have to have anything. That's fine. Post four by somebody else. This mod is broken. I can't get it to work. Please read the above. And etc, etc.
Post five should be picnic. I used to work in support. And picnic stands for problem in chair, not in code.
I went back and tried to teach my girlfriend how to play just from vanilla Brave New World, and it just kind of made me weak silently, but you're not allowed to do that in front of women.
Are we recording all these things that say we were drunk playing games?
Oh, there's no shame. There's physical evidence of me doing so already, so like whatever dignity I had, I lost it a long time ago.
Just seems like the call's acting a bit odd. I don't know if we're still all here. It's saying two participants now.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So Jan might need to restart the mod. I might need to restart the call.
The other important question is who is taping it.
Well, I'm not.
Yes, I'm recording, and the recording didn't stop for those awkward 2 minutes. So it was just redialing for me.
What the editor's for.
I'll just pretend like I know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Well, I am working on Civ art right now, and it's not Greece.
It's not Greece.
It isn't.
It is Greece.
No, I just said it isn't.
Oh, it isn't Greece. What is it then?
You're being coy. Don't toy with my emotions like that.
The community patch and the Hoard's DLL took a...
I think the majority of us are just going to pre-order because it has the name Civ on it.
That's what we do
Beyond Earth.
What I did with Beyond Earth.
If you're a modder and you love the game, you love Civ.
I can guarantee that it will be unfinished the day it comes out, like all other software on the face of this planet. says the professional software developer. I still think modding wish list is going to be I wish somebody would write my mod for me.
That's always my wish list. Can someone please write my mods for me?
Yeah, we are going off topic.
I like it. I like that.
You haven't been to a modcast before. Yeah. Joining me today, I'm Robert 8. I can't even say my own name. Joining me today, where?
Jan Boruta.
Steve Bengolan. Oh, God, it happened again. We're never going to wrap this.
Joining me today, where?
Steve Bengolan.
God damn it.
You go first.
No problem. Look forward to listening to my own voice. In fact, it's probably one I won't listen to. So.
Well, you know what's in it inside.
Well, you know there's only something like 39 phonemes, so Dan can change it around so you say anything that we want to.
Record date,
January 23rd, 2016.
Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.